It is now hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio, the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from the fabulously Fukushima irradiated island chained paradise in the sunny slave South Pacific, where everybody has a part time job as an eco light bulb. And my very special guest is the wonderful and is it effervescent? Because I've heard people say ever effluent, and I thought that ever effluent just meant unlimited poo.
I don't know.
I could be wrong. I don't know. Anyway, what were we talking about? Oh, yeah. When things come to a head, what's it called? That Kundalini awakening, I think it is. You have this real eye-opening experience, and you have an entire reversal, a enormous shift or change in your current life. Now, a lot of people are talking about these arbitrary shifts, like, for example, today or yesterday, it might have been, Comet Ellen or Eisen or something of that nature. Stu Webb saying it's going to like impact on like November the 15th, and like if it impacts in water, that's going to wipe out most of the coastal cities, or if it hits near land, it'll wipe out like 3 states in the US or something like that. You know, this sort of thing. And my friend John Eisen from uncensored.co.nz has been talking about this as well. And, you know, I just don't believe in being afraid of the end of the world at all, or even really even preparing for it. I don't know why. Maybe I'm a fly by the seat of my pants kind of guy. Figure I can talk myself in or out of any situation. In most cases, it seems to be the problem. And because I just think about this, like, where were you on December 21st, 2012? I was at home with a couple of the mates around, watching the movie 2012 that I have on DVD, you know?
That's a good one.
just for a laugh.
I thought for a long time that something big was going to happen. My husband and I both did, and we were looking at each other like, oh my God. And as it got closer and closer, we just realized that nothing was going to happen. And then nothing did, and it was kind of like Y2K.
Everything's Y2K, global warming, global cooling, freaking la 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 la. Everything's designed to just mind control you, basically. If you think that something bad is coming, you have a different perspective on life, don't you? You think about it being finite, and so you stop thinking long term, and you start thinking selfishly.
Well, okay, I don't mean to backtrack, but let's go back to the French Revolution and Robespierre. One of the things that they instilled was a sense of religious belief. They instilled a parade and a holiday for the supreme being. That's what they called it, the supreme being. And they wanted everyone to have a universal within the state ideology of whatever religion was, you know, that they were putting forth. Everyone had to believe in the supreme being, using religion to kind of keep people in line, which is what religion has always been used for, to make sure that everybody stays the course and keeps it going, because the society needs to thrive and the government needs to continue.
Continuity of government. Now, I wonder, is there any point to it? Because as far as I see, the further government continues to grow and expand, the worse everybody's life becomes. However, I do believe in limited government. And this hamster wheel that we've all got ourselves on, just taxed on every single thing you could possibly conceive of. This, how many different types of tax are there in the US that you have to pay, Suzanne? Isn't like in the something thousands, like 6,000 different types of freaking tax people have to pay?
Oh, I'm sure. I have no idea, but I'm sure it's. It wouldn't surprise me if it was that much.
Yeah,
I don't. And that, the question.
And I think
is,
that was probably pre-Obama. That was probably pre-Obama. Goodness knows, it could be like freaking 8,000-10,000 times you raise your tax. Oh my God, it's like having all. Just think about this. Think about the government as a mosquito, right? And think about a type of taxation as a type of mosquito. Imagine being bitten by 1,000 mosquitoes at the same time. They'd drain all the lifeblood out of you, you'd be dead, wouldn't you? And that's exactly what happens over your entire life. They come in, they suck the blood out of you, and then they go home and they lay their eggs.
That's definitely a picture in your mind for you. Jeez.
You just smashed a little swarm of them, you know.
Kind of like these little drones, these little fly drones and butterfly drones that they have, that they're just swarming around. Like in that movie Amityville Horror, when the room got infested by flies, and then the voices get out.
Yeah, kind of a little bit worse than that, but yeah.
That's all I remember.
You probably turned off the computer at that point.
I just blocked this stuff out. It's useless.
Well, it can be a harsh experience.
I've never been in a room where a disembodied voice told me to leave. So I don't know.
Well, obviously, you haven't been to a house party in New Zealand.
No. Oh, jeez.
No, wait, I'm just... No, a disembodied voice, maybe a disheveled voice at least, though. Speaking of horror, I wonder if it's okay to do this on the radio, but to actually just talk about some of these kind of really, really horrific things that the elite do, and the things that are the most painful to hear, and the ones that evoke the worst images that you could conceive. You know, think about that for a moment. What images get conjured up in your mind?
When they were putting their children out during, like, when Cyprus was, not Cyprus, Greece, and the whole thing started, and they started going under, and the pictures of people putting their children out to be sold. That really bothered me. You know, that you would get to that point, that you would think that somebody else would be better off with your children than you because you can't support them and you don't see a way to ever support them. Just broke my heart.
Yeah, that really sucks, man.
I don't know if that was horrible. Well, to me, that was horrifying because I have my two babies and I can't imagine life without them. So I can't imagine what a parent would have to go through to get to that point.
Yeah. And also, people who aren't parents don't get that, I don't think. Because when you're not actually directly responsible for the life of another human being, you don't really know what love is.
Yeah, that's true. Well, that's a huge problem with a lot of kids that are adopted. They don't, my husband was adopted, and so he went through that. He found his birth mother, and so that repaired that hole for him. But he spent a long time wondering, you know, who really loved him or who really cared about him if his own mother didn't. And a lot of my friends and even myself, growing up in a broken home, you go through that too when your parents get divorced. They say, oh, it has nothing to do with you, but you never believe that. So you spend the whole life wondering what you did wrong and trying to fix the relationship with your parents, with other people. And, you know, like a couple of years ago, I sat down with both my parents and told them how I felt, and they told me how they felt, and it repaired the damage. But I don't know how many people actually do that.
Well, I think also in order to, let's say if you're watching a movie or whatever, and there's a really sad scene, the reason why people find it really sad is because something like that might have happened to them. You know, there's something they can relate to. If you can't relate to that, you know, if you haven't really experienced a huge suffering, pain, loss, and what have you, I think it shuts out your empathy to a large degree because you just don't know what it feels like.
Sure, and we're supposed to innately have feelings toward other people that we don't feel at the moment ourselves. We're supposed to be able to imagine what it would feel like to be someone else and therefore feel sympathy toward them. And that's supposed to be an innate function of our personality, but it's been taught out of us. And I think it goes back to what we were saying before about watching violence and rape and abuse on television emulated in our lives, in our music, in our art. If it's inundated, it ends up desensitizing. Now, I'm not saying that violent art or violent music or violent movies shouldn't be made, but if that's all that we're consuming, it's going to have an effect on us. It's just obvious. If all you eat is peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, your body's going to break down eventually.
Yeah, well, I would say so. You need nutrients. When your body is creating and assembling these kind of chains of information to make amino acids, which your body basically lives off, it needs nutrients in order to fill in. Kind of, it's the cement that holds the code together. And if you don't have any of those nutrients, you're fracked because you can't actually build anything that your body needs. Nothing to protect itself, nothing to regrow itself. You know, you're basically, you're done and dusted. The problem is food. In the United States, it used to be measured, I think, in about the parts per million of nutritional bioavailable mineral quantity per million. And back in 1950 or something of that nature, it was around about 400 parts per million. And today it's around 40 to 50 to 60 parts per million. You've heard of the 5-plus-a-day campaign, you know, to eat 5 fruit and vegetables a day?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Well, let's say that was done back in the 50s. That would mean today, in order to get the same nutritional quantity, you'd have to eat 50 a day.
That's the problem. With Codex Alimentarius, even, you know, the supplements, the food is destroyed with the GMO. So, yeah, you're eating 5 fruits a day, but you're eating GMO fruits, so scratch that. And with the supplements that we're taking, they're so watered down that they're ineffectual, and therefore you'd have to eat a whole bottle, and you'd get sick off the gelatin of the capsules. So we're not doing ourselves any good other than growing our own food and speaking to our local farmers and making sure that they're growing their food and they're taking care of their animals the way that they should so that they have healthy meat and healthy fruit and vegetables to sell to you. Other than that, you're screwed, basically.
Well, if I say that we're basically screwed because we don't have enough good food, there's things to do about that. I mean, we've got a garden out the back that Sarah's really been tending to quite well, and it's done in a very permaculture fashion. So it's only a very small garden, but out of that very small garden, you've got, you know, celery to pick off, lettuce, silver beet, chives, 2 different types of parsley, sage, oregano, that kind of thing, rosemary. So you're always picking off a herb or two here or there, and you never you never go hungry, and it's only a very small gun. And that we've once you've built up the soil after about a year or so, you've got yourself a veritable little food forest patch. It's not that hard to do. The problem is people don't have the willpower or the creativity in order to make it happen. The Japanese have figured out a really good way to grow their own food. Just cans, you know. You got those big cans of like Campbell's soup or something like that. They've been painting the outside of them, filling them with soil, and then planting little herb plants in there that they can have there growing on the windowsill and pick them every so often for cooking. You know, you don't realize how much space you actually have for plants and food to grow, because growing food is like growing money. And money's tight right now, isn't it? So you better start growing a bit of food, shouldn't you?
And absolutely. Absolutely, you should. If you just have a windowsill, you know, clear off an area in your kitchen if you don't have a back. If you have a back deck, you can grow an herb garden. You can grow some vegetables. Not all. Some of it gets heavy, and you don't want to, you know, drop your deck on your neighbor underneath. But we all should be supplementing with real food that we're growing, because even if it's just a little bit right now, it's like getting a taste for it, and it makes you feel good. And so you want to do more, and so you will. So then you'll go to a community garden in your area and rent a space for $40 or $50 for the season and grow more food. And it's contagious.
I also like the idea of sharing with your neighbors, you know. There's so many other different organizations out there. In New Zealand, we've got this thing called UBI, Out of Our Backyards. And they meet up all the time, swap around food, buy each other's stuff, put up stalls together. It's a great way to kind of get food, like real food, involved within the community. We'll be right back after the break at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Don't you go anywhere, folks.
I got some so-called friends. I'll smile right to my face. All when my back is turned. They like to bury me without a trace. Oh, no, no. Oh, no.
Welcome back. I'm flying a JFK. You are listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. At least I hope that you're really, really listening, because we talk about some real important stuff on this freaking show, bro. I mean, seriously. Now think about it. Think about it. Really, really seriously. Look at the mainstream media. Think about what the alternative is. You definitely don't want to be watching the mainstream media, mate. Unless, of course, it's just to have a laugh. Like, for my money, Suzanne, I don't think it gets any funnier than seeing Barack Obama give speeches. Oh, my God.
Oh, you know what was funny to me was the day of the LAX shooting. That was huge. It was all over the news. Everyone was paying attention to it. No one was paying attention to the executive order that Obama signed that handed over the United States to the UN officially under Agenda 21. For the sake of climate change, Obama threatened back in February that he would issue an executive order if Congress didn't act, and so he issued an executive order that would give the government the response to prepare the nation for the impacts of climate change. This included periods of excessive high temperatures, heavy downpours. Heavy downpours? Seriously? Like it's raining a lot? And so we are subject to Agenda 21 and government control because it's raining a lot? Increased wildfires, severe drought, permafrost thawing, ocean acidification. Ocean acidification is the scheme where they're sequestering CO2 in the ocean that is destroying the plant life and the marine life that is sanctioned by the UN and used by various governments. That has nothing to do with us. That's them. And then rising sea levels.
Well, that's what happens when you do too much acidification.
Maybe that's Al Gore's problem. But yeah, everybody's paying attention to the shooting at LAX, and nobody is watching how this executive order expounds on a previous executive order that gives the government an action plan, a task force that works with all governmental agencies, local, state, and federal, engaging in strong partnerships and information sharing at all levels of the government, including state and local, risk information decision making, and tools to facilitate the action plan that the government, the federal government, is putting down, disseminating down throughout the governments, adapting, learning, and experience serving opportunities for people to come together and promote all of this climate change propaganda, and preparedness planning.
It's a cult, basically. No different to the Aztecs, you know. Oh, I worship your son. I will bring you a drought unless you sacrifice a whole bunch of my political adversaries and give me their daughters to rape as well. You know, okay? Otherwise, there'll be like some bad weather, bro. Right? Trust me, all right? All I'm asking for is all your gold and all your women. Trust me. The weather's going to turn bad unless you give me all your gold and all your women so I can appease the gods.
Yes, yeah, exactly. They knew that the solar eclipse was going to end, but at the same time they told everyone that it wasn't, and they needed to tear out the hearts of X amount of people, and blood needed to flow in the streets. So they killed a bunch of people, and then, and, you know, the solar eclipse or the lunar eclipse goes away, and everyone says, phew, thank God we killed all those people. Otherwise, God, what would have happened?
Yeah, it's amazing what you can do just knowing what happens in the natural world when other people have no freaking clue about it. You know, they'll think you're a magician. Like Tesla.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
In fact, somebody asked me once if I could speak to anybody living or dead, who would it be? Freaking Tesla, bro.
I'd like to speak to Jesus and get the record straight, yeah. Get the whole record straight, because everybody's got their version of what Jesus said. I'd like to know exactly what he said.
Yeah. Jamming with the J-Man.
Well, I would just like to know. You know, it's always in the back of everyone's head. That's why fear from a religion works so well. Who's right? Which religion is right? Nobody knows, because the people who know are dead and they're not talking.
And all the religious leaders claim that they are the harbingers of the one truth.
Exactly. So who, I mean, if there is a God, I don't want to piss God off. So which one is correct? Or are none of them correct?
Well, when two people say two contradictory things, it's because one of them's lying. And so now what we have is we have all the religions saying contradictory things. So to my mind, it probably means that all of them are lying.
Exactly. And think about how many civilizations have grown up dependent on this belief, and how many social ideology and the way in which we treat each other even today is based on all of these beliefs that may just be whatever somebody concocted. Like Scientology, you know, you're not selling that many sci-fi books. Hey, I'll just write a religion and make a ton of money.
Well, it's funny you should mention that, because I just went to a funeral, and unbeknownst to me, the guy who I was going to the funeral for was like one of the founding members of the Scientology Church in New Zealand here.
Were you clear?
I suddenly realized that I was surrounded by Scientologists.
Did they audit you?
I don't know.
You know, they have like that process where you have to clear yourself of all of the evil demons or whatever that are inside of you.
Was L. Ron Hubbard a Freemason or something? I don't know.
Was he? I don't know. I'll look that up.
But But one of the stories goes, and the general rules of thumbs is that if it's a branch off religion or something like that, it's probably some form of Freemasonry started by some kind of 33rd degree Freemason, you know, who really believed in it. But at the end of the day, it just wound up co-opting people in the name of the Supreme Council or the Order of the Silver Star, which is a.k.a. the Illuminati. So let's think about this. If you wanted to control the world, wouldn't you really, really want to make sure that you could take control of all the religions first, you know, so that all the people that are used to believing stuff that they can't see or measure or touch dance to your little tune? Maybe dance a little different tune to everybody else around them so that they're always constantly infighting and bickering amongst themselves and not realizing that you're the one that created both of those religions for them to bicker and argue amongst yourselves? So you never figure out that there's somebody with his hand up the backside of the person who's telling you what to believe?
In a puppetry type fashion? I don't know what you're talking about. That's crazy talk. What are you talking about? That can't be true. Everybody is lying. Everything came from one source? No, that's crazy talk.
Yeah.
that's what Catholicism was. You know, that's what it was intended to be, the one world religion. It just didn't work out. You know, Martin Luther kind of screwed things up.
Yeah.
And then you had to have the Counter-Reformation, and you had to bring people back by any means necessary, which means you had to have the Inquisition and kill people in order to get them saved.
Yeah. Well, I do believe that there's something interesting going on planet Earth right now, kind of strangely, right? For example, last night I was randomly, and this happens to me reasonably often, thought about the name Mrs. Nesbitt. Mrs. Nesbitt? Where in the hell is this name Mrs. Nesbitt coming from?
That's from Toy Story.
Because I went to sleep, and I got up, and I went to my Facebook, and I went to the birthdays. It's kind of the first thing I do, like find out whose birthday it is today, and then send them my happy birthday song to make them feel better about it, you know. And one of the names that came up was Mrs. Nesbitt.
That is strange.
It's happening to me a lot. Like it happened the day before that, and the day before that, I'm really starting to kind of have all of these little strange coincidences, like things popping into my mind and then showing up within quick succession. Like something's happening to me.
I have some really weird things happen and always have in my life, and I just file it away as I don't know. You know, I've gone to people and asked them, you know, priests and pastors and rabbis and holy men of all different kinds and people in the New Age movement. It just doesn't seem to make complete sense, but there's definitely an element that we don't ever discuss that is the weirdness that goes on.
It's a synchronicity factor. And I think Ellen Aberdessa Green had a term for this. What was it? Synchromysticism. Basically, these kind of things that happen that are, you know, amazing coincidences happen for whatever reason. And at the end of the day, you have something to contribute, something random, something amazing, something completely unpredictable. And in that way, it makes life extraordinarily exciting, doesn't it? Because, I mean, nothing's all planned out, and there's a whole bunch of strange, interesting ways and coincidences that can happen that can change your entire life experience. And what I'd love to be able to do, because I think that human beings are capable of this. I think Nancy Duterte, I think the skeptical psychic, wrote a great book about this, about how you can actually train yourself to start being able to use your psychic abilities. And I think that would be really, really cool, especially for like doing songs and radio and stuff. Just being able to kind of tap into things a little bit. You know how like the Jedi's can see things before they happen, and that's why they appear to have such quick reflexes. Well, I want to be able to see things before they happen, and that's why I appear to have such quick wit.
I've had dreams that came true. When I was 12 years old, we had a hurricane coming, and I had a dream about it like 2 months before it even happened. And so the day that we were all packing our stuff, going to a friend's house to ride out the storm, I packed all of the stuff that I didn't want to get destroyed and put it in the back of the car. And my mom got mad at me. She says, but it's taking up room. We have all these other provisions we need to put in the car. And I said, well, but we're not coming back. And she laughed at me. And we never came back. The entire area was completely destroyed, leveled overnight. I don't know what that was. I don't know what I tapped into or what was going on there, but it's definitely filed into, you know, my life experience is weird.
Yeah. I remember one time I had this guy, Shane Wenzel, a.k.a. Tane Raka, is a psychopath, you know, uses people, makes up all this BS to cover his ass, and just basically is just a con man and a liar and a cheat and a fraud and a violent abuser. And me and my friend go in to record him just doing what he normally does, you know, threatening, intimidating, dodging questions and that kind of thing. He notices then we've got a camera on him, so he throws me out of the building, and I'm filming him through the window, and he starts roughing up my mane. And so we got him on camera yelling and screaming and grabbing him by the shirt collars and getting him in his face and everything like that. Well, all these little bloody Black Power gang members are like standing around kind of like little slave scum, you know, just terrible little onlookers to this kind of abuse and scumbaggery. And we exposed his ass, you know. And what happened was, about a day before that happened, I was coming down to my car, and something told me, Vinny, you need to get in the car as quickly as possible and get the engine turned on and get out. And I was like, okay. So very, very quickly got the key in the door. Open the door. I opened it so quickly that I actually grazed myself across the chest as I was opening it.
and I
got in, put the key in the car, turned it on, put it in reverse, closed the door, put the handbrake down, and I was boom, and I was moving. And then the very next night, that's when we went and exposed this guy. My mate was blocking them. I had a chance to make for the car, and my mate told him to go for the car. Just went for the car, got the key in the lock, opened the door, turned the key on, put it in drive, bopped down the thing, opened the door for my mate, got him in, and we were out of there. And we got all the footage and everything, and we exposed his freaking ass. So that any time any activist gets talked to by the sociopathic motherfucker, we can send him this video of him trying to rough us up. And being the scumbag that he is, lying blatantly. You know? When you put
That's
yourself in
stuff.
Harm's way, that's the interesting thing, though. When you're in harm's way, something tries to tell you, shh, you're in harm's way. Pay attention. Listen. Make sure that you listen to those instincts. They'll get you out of those sticky situations, folks. They're there for a reason. We'll be right back after the break at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. Welcome back. All right, ladies and gentlemen, it's the final segment here, the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. In the new time slot, if you are listening to the live stream at AmericanFreedomRadio.com, it's good to download it to iTunes or something like that. That way you don't have to go to the website. You can just press play, or it's on Winamp and all other sorts of things, including on your smartphones. Just trying to dig into this. How can they possibly think about cancelling Skype for desktop clients. You know, well, there's this big rumor going around about it. It's just, my God, it's like a world-changing event in Skype circles, I guess. Anyway, Suzanne Posel, OccupyCorporatism.com is my guess. Now, we're talking about these kind of weird spiritual experiences, and you just were telling me about one of these experiences you had over the break, and I don't think you want to mention that one on air. But there's a lot of really weird things that happen to people, you know, and apparently there's a drug element to this. Like, they say that alcohol and methamphetamine use are the ones that really ripen you up for, like, demon possession or something like that. You know, have you ever seen somebody like who's, like, so drunk or, like, so hyped up on speed that they appear they're kind of acting like a demon?
No, I have. I didn't hang out with those kind of kids or anything. But I've heard stories about it. The people on coke are absolute. Well, I've also heard stories that coke enhances the personality. So if you're naturally a douchebag, I guess you're even more of a douchebag.
A super douche.
Super douche, like with a cape.
Here he is to save the day. Super douche is on the way. Yeah. I could just think of so many different heads you could put on top of the SD uniform. Now, SD, is that like a type of information card? I think it is.
SD?
Yeah. Super douche.
Oh, yeah.
It's, you know, like if you have the Superman costume, except instead of the big S, there's a big S and a little D.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's real super, but he's a little bit of a douche.
Well, I think it's the same thing with alcohol, too.
Yeah. I have seen many people, countless times, from a sober, genuine, decent person, turn into a drunk, maniacal, obnoxious, fiending, a parasite of a person. You know, the change is extraordinary, and it's come to my attention that there are certain substances which certain people should certainly never imbibe in because it's just not for them. You know, maybe you have a low tolerance, bro. If you've got a low tolerance, don't freaking do it.
Well, the other thing is the age level. I think that people get caught up in living the party life for too long, and it just looks really bad when you're like in your 40s and you're still sitting at the bar dressing like you're in your teens. You know, it's just not pretty anymore.
Yeah. You know, the best thing about high school girls, you get older, they stay the same age.
Yeah, like as a high schooler and right out of high school, we used to go to clubs and go to like film parties and things like that. But I kind of stayed away from it, just going a few times because I saw the people in the bars and the clubs and they all kind of looked so sad to me. They were all just trying to go home with somebody. Like, that's their whole life. They work all day and then they just go to this club and spend all this money and try to have sex. And then they either do or they don't. And then they go to work and then they go back to the club and try and do it all over again. What kind of life is that?
You mean a life where you work real hard and then party real hard and get laid?
Well, I guess many people getting laid.
Well, that's because they don't do it in public, Suzanne.
Well, okay, yes, that's true. I never went to any of those parties, but...
A showing up party.
Yeah, no, ugh. But it just seemed like the same people were going to these places and pathetically trying to pick each other up, and maybe once you get through the whole bar, then where do you go? Do you just start on a new bar once you've had sex with everybody who goes to that bar?
Well, basically, the idea is to keep going to bars until eventually you wind up shagging somebody who you actually halfway care about, and then you wind up going out with them instead of going out to a bar anymore.
Well, what kind of relationship can you start when you both were drunk and you both thought you looked better than when you do when you wake up?
Well, that's how my relationship with Sarah started. We're getting married in January. Thank you very much.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, we got pumped out like totally bad. Like I was interested in her friend kind of thing, and then her friend didn't like me, so she introduced me to Sarah at the same night, and then she got us drunk off some cheap vodka, and, you know, one thing led to another. And at the time I was cycling everywhere, and Sarah was able to, you know, take my bike apart, put it in the back of her little Holden Barina, and then drive us home to my place and then reassemble the bike. And this is in the middle of the night, mind you. Well, we've both been drinking a little. Right.
No, that's a keeper.
That's exactly what I said. I said that, yep, she's a keeper.
That has to be an exception to the rule.
Oh, yeah. There's been many other times when I've been drunk around with a woman and it hasn't worked out anywhere near as well.
And a lot of my friends who went partying, they got married and they're either divorced with children or they're still living with their significant other in a trailer. I've got one friend who's living in a trailer with this guy with like four kids, and I don't even understand why.
Does she have a gingham skirt?
I haven't seen her in years. We speak occasionally on Facebook and email each other, but she sends me pictures of her family, and it's just so sad because I knew this girl for 4 years in high school, and she's just a shadow of what she was. And I think a lot of it has to do with the choices that she made, going out to parties and doing things that she probably didn't think about before she did them. And then 4 kids later, you know, you're in a trailer.
Well, I think there's an old saying, sometimes you end up exactly where you deserve to be.
Oh, that's harsh, man. 4 kids in a trailer. I don't care how wide it is. It's still horrible.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's bad to say, oh, it's just your problem and whatever. But, you know, to what extent, and I think this is really important upon reflection, to what extent are our choices actually mandated by the environment that we're in rather than them actually being our own choices? For example, if you don't even have the information on something, then how in the heck would you even make a choice about it, not knowing that there's any other information other than what some person blagged and lied to you about it? You know?
No, I was talking about this with my husband earlier today because we were talking about genetics as opposed to environment. And yes, when you have a genetic foundation upon which to build, but it is your decision after you get that genetic foundation what you do with it, and that affects your body. So if you have a propensity towards something and you enable that propensity and feed into it, of course you're going to get the outcome that you think. And then you'll say, oh, well, everybody in my family has this. No, it's just everybody in the family decided to nurture that aspect of their genetics.
I do think so. Also, there's the other element, which is if really bad traumas happen to you, that sculpts your character way, way, way hugely, I think.
Yes, and it really irritates me when we have these preconceived notions of how we're supposed to react to funerals, to divorces, to losses of job, to the death of a child. And if you don't react that prescribed way, then you're not normal. And it's ridiculous because in moments when we're out of our element, out of our comfort zone, in extreme grief, when our life has been turned upside down, I don't think there's any way to say that any way to react is normal, you know, or abnormal. It's however you're reacting.
Yeah, I think people blame each other too much, and they read too much into things when really it's just, you know, something that happens. And also, there's the other element. What you see isn't necessarily what you see. What you think you're seeing might be just what you remember seeing about something else happening, right? You might find this really strange to think about, but what you see is in a large part simply what you remember seeing. So if you see somebody telling one particular story or whatever, and they're telling the same story that you heard another scumbag say, you start to think maybe this person's a scumbag, when that person has no idea what you're thinking and actually isn't a scumbag at all. Just because you're seeing something that you've seen before doesn't mean it's the exact same thing. And maybe upon a little further investigation, you would see that it is very, very different indeed. And this is where a lot of people in various movements where it's very emotional and the cause is very important start to infight about a lot, because they all get suspicious of each other and they don't actually want to look at the information because they've all been screwed over by sociopaths in the past, and they assume that you're one if you start exhibiting even the slightest similarity in your behaviours. You know, that's the kind of world that we live in. You do have to be cautious of that, but, you know, sometimes I think if you void all trust in all other people, yeah, it's a hard life indeed. Suzanne Posel, OccupyCorporatism.com. Ladies and gentlemen, go check out her website and TheVinnieExtraShow.com. We'll see you again.